Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Good morning, and welcome to season two of my show, Everyday People, here at 92.7 Arrow FM, your most favourite community access station that is here for you. It has just gone 9 o'clock on the 8th of January 2025. Holy hell, this year's going fast, isn't it? 8 days already. How was your holiday? Oh my gosh. If you're lucky enough, at Scott Perry, you'll still be on holiday, which is pretty damn cool. But it must be hard getting back to work after having such a nice, relaxing time off. And you probably didn't get out and do much either because of the weather, but that's all cool. Hey, look, I'm really excited about season two of Everyday People. Last year, season one, the pilot of the show, had everything just went so well, and we spent the year having amazing and super amazing guests. And guess what? I'm doing it all again this year for you guys. So this is really cool. And guess what? We're kicking the show off with one of our local legends. Oh my goodness, Steve Francis, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. It is so good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's not a problem, because like, it was really cool when I asked you if you wanted to come on, and you were just like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I love it when people do that. I always get really surprised, like, oh, you want to go on my show?
It's my pleasure.
Oh, excellent. So you haven't lived in Masterton for a long time.
No.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, like maybe mid-90s, I probably got the hell out of here.
Yeah, you're still a master, boy. You bloody are. You can't hear. Yeah. I'm not going to go on to that. But anyway, look, so you grew up here, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm born and bred. Grew up down the south end of Masterton on Ferguson Street.
Yes.
Yep. Went to Harley Street, which isn't there anymore.
No, it's not.
No, it's gone. Then I went through MIS and I was a Y Coal boy.
Oh, were ya? Yeah. You know what? I remember. Yeah. The pictures just came back into my head. I'm like, oh gosh, we're getting on. So you grew up here and you went to Y Coal as well. I remember you got quite a cool group of friends, and a lot of you are still good friends.
Yeah, most of my best friends are, you know, from that era, and we've kept in touch, and we, you know, you get older and life gets busier and it's a little harder to catch up, but no, we're still all hang out, and when the time arises, we manage to get together.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the reasons why I got you on the show is, so as I was growing up, we didn't like run in the same crowds as we were growing up here in Masterton, but what I did do was being such a small town, you notice people and you see people, and you were very much into the music scene.
Yeah.
Now, I was just going to say, and was it absolute carnage?
Yeah, well, it was a very small scene. And I guess for me growing up, I was very lucky. I had older brothers who had pretty cool record collections.
Mm.
So growing up in Masterton, there were two record stores. We had Centrepoint Records.
Yeah.
And there was the other one down the other end. I think it might have been called Steel and Ball.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So two record stores. So we used to make regular trips there and build our record or tape collections.
Yeah.
And I had two older brothers who got into, like, my oldest brother Tony had, like, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Van Halen, etc. And then my other brother Jeff, he started bringing stuff into the house, a lot of punk stuff like Sex Pistols and Blitz. So luckily I grew up, I was still like a pop kid. I was into Duran Duran.
Yeah.
And, like we all were.
Yes.
But I was very lucky that I was exposed to some kind of stuff a little bit out the gate early, and that kind of really influenced on where I headed.
Yeah, absolutely. And why I said the word absolute carnage, because I was trying to do a segue. I was trying to be smart, but it's my first show of the year. The name of that band?
Yeah.
Carnage.
Yep, first band, so schoolmates. We couldn't play very well, but that didn't matter. It was all about attitude.
Yes, and you guys had it.
Yeah, so we had a band room. Actually, about three shops down that way, up above.
Yeah.
Like, right on the corner there. I think it was a brothel at some stage.
Yes, it was.
That we were there before the brothel.
Yeah.
First band room, we used to get up there and make a hideous racket and terrorise the town and played a bunch of shows, played a pretty infamous show at the Solway Showgrounds in 1991. That was our first show.
Why was it infamous?
It was the first kind of, I guess, real metal show in Masterton, sorry. And, you know, everyone came and there was a bit of damage. There was a few toilets smashed.
Oh, true.
Masterton. Just people being people.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's where it kind of all started. And we existed for a couple of years and then we moved to Wellington and then it just kind of, yeah, we all moved on from there.
Yeah. No, so you also played at that, what's that, Mountain Rock.
Yeah, Mountain Rock. Yeah. That was like 92, I think.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
Would that have been the biggest gig that you guys did?
Probably the most people, but the best gig for us is there's a very influential band from the UK called Carcass.
Yes.
And they toured Wellington and we got asked to open for them.
Wow.
So we were like little 19-year-old little dweebs.
Yeah.
So we're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, really? So that was a pretty cool moment for us.
Do you know what? I think I can remember the posters for that.
Yeah.
I actually can. That's crazy that like words can just pop memories into your head. So we've been talking about how you're in bands, you're into music. What do you play?
I play drums.
And okay, so let's start from there. With the drums, how old were you when you started that and what influenced you to get into that?
Well, I've got very small hands. I always wanted to be a guitarist.
Ah!
My tiny little hands weren't quite made for guitar. Eddie Van Halen was my number one musical hero. So grew up idolizing him. I actually have a big Eddie tattoo on my leg.
Yeah.
I've always been like a frustrated front man or a frustrated guitarist that would probably want to get out the front and jump around, but... So couldn't really play the guitar. Had a little bit of a crack at it, and then that was covered with my friends. So I was like, "Oh, I'll play the drums."
Yeah.
So picked up a crappy little drum kit, no lessons. We just started, and you know, it was pretty primitive to start with, and it just slowly slowly got better and better over time.
Man, that is so good, though. But did anyone here in Masterton teach you?
Yes, I did have some lessons, and I'm sorry, Peter. Someone.
Oh.
I'm trying to remember the guy's name. It's been a few years. The brain cells get a bit slower these days.
Because the thing is, they sure do. Telling me, oh God, preaching to the choir. Hey, so I have interviewed a few people, like Elton Harford and Darren Knight, who have taught a huge amount.
Oh, I bet,
a big amount of the musicians that I've interviewed as well, which has been amazing.
That's very cool.
Did you ever give drum lessons to people?
No, I'm pretty self-taught. I'd probably be teaching people with very bad habits if I gave lessons.
So that drumming has led you to, you know, to be in several bands, and it's led you to a band which you're in now, which is doing really, really well. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so we're called Bullet Belt.
Yeah.
It's actually a name I came up with when I was about 15.
Did you?
Yeah. I'd like to name. And then 2009, I started that band just with a person I knew. So I live in Karori in Wellington.
Yeah.
And I knew of a guy who lived in my suburb who had a guitar. So I just texted him. I was like, hey, do you want to start jamming? So he came over and we just started in my lounge just as a two-piece.
Oh.
And it kind of grew from there. And then it was like, hey, let's play a show.
Yeah.
So we played a show. And then before we knew it, we'd played a few shows.
Mm.
And it's kind of started as pretty primitive. The goal at the start was to be black metal. Black metal, it's hard to explain to people. People who, if you know what Metallica is or if you know what Slayer is, it's way more horrible and extreme than that. Like, if you played it to your parents, they would, like, be, like, you'd get kicked out of the house.
Yeah.
So it kind of started like that, and it's diversified a lot. We're 15 years down the track.
Mm.
We've got a really cool lineup, and the musicianship has grown a lot. So we've really diversified, and, Every album's been a little bit different.
Yeah, which is amazing. We're going to play one of your songs soon as well. And you recently did a tour.
Yeah, so we've toured pretty extensively over the last 15 years. We're a very DIY band, so I kind of drive it all. I guess I'm the manager or co-manager of the band, so I'm pretty good at networking, so that's what it's all about. So we've toured Europe, we've toured Japan. We toured Japan this year.
Oh, wow,
for the second time.
Yeah. Last year.
Last year?
Yeah. Sure. Far out, yeah.
Sorry, oops. Yeah, we toured Japan in October last year.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, we were there for 3 weeks, so that was very cool. The year before we toured Europe, we've toured Australia like 10 times. So,
have ya?
Yeah.
Wow. And what's it like being on tour?
It's not as glamorous as it probably sounds. Or looks from afar, or looks on social media. Most of it's cool. The tiresome bit for us is just the travel bit, and we're lugging guitars and drum parts and stuff. So that can get a little tiring, carrying all that stuff around. No one's carrying it for us. We're all, it's very DIY. It's all hands on deck. And so that's the minor negative, but overall it's amazing. Particularly, I really like touring to places we've never been. And for me, meeting new people and checking out the culture and the food. And I do a lot of running, so whenever we go to new places, I always get out running. That's how I like seeing the place.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, it's amazing.
How many Ks would you run? Like in Japan, if you'd go for a run?
I'll go out for about an hour and a half every morning, so run like 10, 15
You must
Ks.
See some really cool things, too. Oh,
you do.
Yeah.
And try not to get lost.
Yeah, that...
I normally run straight lines. First time we were in Japan, and that was 2018, and probably Google Maps wasn't quite as good as it is now. So I just run straight lines because I know if I get lost, it could turn into a five-hour run.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually quite funny. I reckon that would just be absolutely amazing. I've got a friend in Japan at the moment having a ball, and it's like, man, it's one of those countries you really want to go see.
So much to see. Like, we've been there twice, only for like 3 weeks, and you just really see a fraction of it.
Mm.
Even Tokyo, you could spend 2 months in Tokyo and really not see, you know, all of it. There's just so much to see, and there's just so much amazing stuff everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, it would be amazing. And to be up on the stage playing like that, and you're kind of at the back of the people on the stage
Thankfully.
With you. Yeah. But that must be amazing watching their performance as well as the crowds.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like, for me, like, not that I play video games, it's almost like I'm in a video game. But, you know, you're focusing on your job. That's the most important thing. And the crowds in Japan are particularly amazing. Like, the shows start really early. So here the culture is, in the music scene, traditionally shows will start quite late. Like if it's a Friday or Saturday, first band might go on at like 9.
Yeah, yep.
And then the headliner or the main band might go on at 11 or even after. And hopefully that changes because, you know, we're all too busy and we're all getting older.
Yeah, I know.
But Japan, a lot of it's based around the trains because the trains finish at 11.
Oh, of course.
So shows there will start at like 6 or 7 and it's all done by 10.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's amazing. And the shows will finish and the venue staff would have mopped down the whole venue, cleaned the whole place, and it will look spotless like no one's been there like 10 minutes after
That's
the show's
finished. That's insane.
Yeah, such a different culture.
That is such a different culture. How cool is that? So do you have any plans to tour 2025?
At the moment, we are halfway through writing/recording our 6th album. So we're working a lot on that at the moment. We're kind of halfway through recording it. We're recording in Wellington, and we've got a producer in the States who's producing it. And so kind of halfway, got half the song. Well, we've got a couple of the songs back and some almost back, and it's kind of sounding pretty awesome, pretty next level. So it's really all based around when that's going to come out, but we've got a few projects that we're involved in. There's a movie, I can't say too much, but there's a movie we're working with, and it's kind of going to be based around when that is released, when the music will start coming out. So
that's cool.
Maybe late 2025, if not, we'll be in Europe in 2026.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. It is cool. Because you can follow Bullet Bell on all social media platforms.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's not hard to find. And these guys are amazing. What I was just going to say is the fact that, I'm not going to say too much either, but if you're doing music with a movie, that's just, and people get into that movie, because I'm always like, oh, what's that soundtrack? And always doing that. That's going to bring in so many more people to your music, hey?
Hopefully.
It's freaking cool.
Yeah.
So without further ado, guys, I'm going to play one of their songs. This is Cosmic by Bullet Bell. It's a bit long, but we don't care because this is my show and I want to hear the whole song. So here we go, Cosmic, Bullet Bell.
Mm-hmm. you'll see your life is flat. There is no gravity. This cosmic energy makes you free.
Make your run.
through me.
Cosmic by Bullet Belt. Oh, I liked that. I did like that. So that was a taster, but just want you to know that not all their songs sound like that.
No, that's one that you could play to your mum.
Yes, yeah.
And not get kicked out of the house.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, look, I'm trying to get the cameras to work here, guys. Oh, we can see him in we can see Steve in the reflection there, but we're trying to get the cameras to move around. They just don't seem to be working at the moment, but that's okay. Steve, take your headphones off, quickly come around here and just say hello to everybody anyway, because there's people that want to see you. Yo there. There we go.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
How we doing?
So, let's put this here. So, okay. Steve, let's have a chat. Okay. You have a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, I do.
So.
So do you.
Yeah, I know. And you were one of the people that I first messaged when I was going to get my chin done.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I was like, should I or shouldn't I? Something like that.
You're like, does it hurt much? It's all good. Go for it.
F it. Do it. And exactly. I was like, yeah. And I'm really glad I did. I'm a very big admirer of your tattoos.
Thank you.
You go sit back down there. Hey guys, you are listening to my show, Everyday People. This is the first episode of season 2 on 92.7 Arrow FM. It is 9:22 in the morning on Wednesday, the 8th of January. And amazingly, it's 15 degrees outside in the middle of summer. It's insane. I'm not even going to go there.
It's worse in Wellington.
Is it?
Yes, it's been terrible.
Yeah, actually it has, hasn't it? Yep. Yeah, I was there. Just,
like freezing, like we've turned the heaters on the last few days.
Yeah, we've been lighting the fire. It's crazy. Hey, guys, I'm here talking to Steve Francis, who is a born and bred Macedon boy who has done us proud with his music scene. But what people don't realise is that's not all that he does. And you're probably thinking, what does he do? Does he look at him? He's got tattoos. Does he work in a bar? Is he a tattoo artist? What has he got, a coffee shop? Does he brew his own beer? No. What do you do?
My full-time gig is I'm a swim coach.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
Yeah, and what is the name of your team?
We're called Pirates Swim Team. Yeah. So we're based up in Karori in Wellington.
Yeah.
I rolled in there like 18 years ago.
Mm.
So I'd been coaching three or four years in Wellington.
Yeah.
Just kind of fell into it. And because I was a swimmer way back when in Masterton.
Yeah.
And this opportunity came up in Karori to go up there. And the club was very small. It was called Karori Swimming Club and had like 25 swimmers when I first went there. But it's right, if anyone knows the pool, it's right next to Karori Normal School.
Yes.
Which has like 800 kids.
Yes.
And it's a very family orientated, sporty, go get them kind of suburb.
Mm.
So I was like, well, this is just really waiting to happen, you know, to build it. So we've built up, we've got like 200 competitive swimmers in the club now.
We
compete well above our weight nationally and, you know, put swimmers on New Zealand teams. And so, no, we're going really well.
And you also, you come to Masterton with some of your team, don't you? You probably haven't done that for a little while because when I was working on the trains.
Yeah, we come over here for swim camps.
Yes.
Because it's just all set up. We actually stay at Morley Park normally, which is great. Good cabins there in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
No, the cabins are really nice at Morley Park. They're really modern. They have heat pumps, so we stay there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not kidding.
No,
they actually do.
It's not like the bad old days of the 80s. No, it's nice. And so we train it. Yeah, we just walk over and do a week here training at the pools.
And I think that's fantastic. When I was working on the trains and I'd see you guys coming on, I'd be like, go Pirates!
Yeah.
They'd all look at me like, where is she? But, very, very, you must be very proud of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's that's the best part of the job, seeing these little nervous kids come in the door at 8 or 9 and hopefully they stay with me till they head out to uni or whatever.
Yeah.
So seeing them develop over 10 years is always pretty amazing.
You must be able to, by now, obviously, spot someone who's actually really got, I mean, I'm not taking anything, please don't, I'm not minimising anybody's talent here, but you must be able to spot someone who's like, whoa, that dude can really, really swum?
Yeah, look, talent's easy to spot, but the reality is talent is really only 10% of what's required. The people who are going to succeed are the ones that turn up, have a good work ethic, are coachable, understand the importance of team, understand the importance of respecting everyone. These are the attributes that are going to take you further as an athlete than talent.
Yeah.
I see so many talented swimmers in our sport that, you know, are gone by the time they're 13 and 14.
Yeah.
And one of the big things in our sport is we blow up these kids who are 9, 10, 11, probably happens over here too.
Mm.
You know, they win 10 medals at, you know, the local champs, or they're the champion at school. And, you know, unfortunately, there's only one way to go from being a 10-year-old champion, right? It's a lot of pressure for a little guy.
Yeah.
So I like more to look at a long-term development and not put too much pressure on 10, 11, 12-year-olds because they're just kids.
They are just kids. They're just fun.
They're just babies. It's got to be fun. And so trying more to have more of a long-term approach to it. And, look, talent will shine through in the end, but without work ethic and coachability, that's nothing.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely. I just think that's fantastic, your team. And you came up with the name you were telling me. Well, I love pirate stuff.
It's a funny story, actually. So it's quite a conservative area.
Yes.
And here's me bowling out. Probably not quite as tattooed as I am now, but I was still pretty tattooed. And so I took over this club and I bided my time. It was I don't know if you know swimming logos, but they're not super exciting. So the colours were yellow and with blue writing, and it was a picture of a swimmer's arm and a head, you know, the classic.
Yeah.
So I kind of bided my time, and a lot of it was based around, it was really like 90% girls, the club when I went there. So I was like, how can I attract more boys to want to come and swim and get excited? So I came up with this name, Pirates.
Yeah.
I thought it was just really easy to remember. Yeah. I've got a really strong logo that's very recognisable. So anyway, we had to hold a special general meeting to change the name.
Oh, wow.
So I hired out this hall, and the whole club came in and all the parents, and I had the new logo hidden behind the behind a blanket, and so I got up and did my spiel, and then I pulled the blanket back, and it was just silence.
Oh.
You could have heard a pin drop.
Oh no!
And I was like, so what do you think? And one parent put their hand up, and they said, "Do you see the negative connotations of a skull?" And I was like, "No, I don't at all. Like, we all have a skull. Yeah. You know? It's such a strong image."
Yeah.
And then they all came around and jumped on and supported.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
All right, you know what? It takes guts to do things like that. It's not just guts as well. It's just wanting to push forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and lots of people are scared of change, eh?
Swimming's very conservative. Like, swim meets long and boring, and, you know, we're trying to attract. We look at all the other sports. Look at cricket and rugby, you know, like T20 and sevens.
Yeah.
Like, sports have diversified and gotten clever and worked out that people don't have the time to sit around for 5 hours at a long, boring swim meet.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
The coaches are constantly pushing to move our sport forward and make it a little more exciting.
Oh, yeah, Shivers, yeah, because we've had some talent over the years in the Olympics and things like that. And, you're brilliant. That's so cool.
Thank you.
No, well done. So that's amazing. I want to now touch on your sobriety, which, you know, I think anyone who can just say, hey, I'm not doing that anymore, is pretty damn amazing. So how long have you been sober for?
Maybe 10 years ago. So I started in 2009, I decided to do an Ironman. So I
remember when you said it,
Yeah, so it, like, I was a little chubby and a little unfit, and, you know, I drank too much and I ate bad. So I became a vegetarian.
Oh, wow.
And which I'm now vegan. I'm not trying to be all preachy here.
Yeah,
so I've been plant-based since, like, yeah, exactly. That sounds very wanky, doesn't it? But I've been vegan maybe since 2012. So just trying to find healthier ways. Like, you get older and you can't quite do the things you used to be able to do when you're young. You can just bounce back.
Yeah.
So I entered this Ironman and I kind of got into that, and I've done 8 of them now.
Mm.
And as I got older, like, doing all that training and competing, but then trying to also go out with my mates, and
yeah,
it just got to a point where I couldn't it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
You know, and as you get older, you know, the hangovers go from one day to 5 days and, you know, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I just kind of got over it. And it was just a slow withdrawal, I guess. And, so these days I'm happy just waking up and feeling somewhat decent.
Yeah.
A little creaky and the bones are, you know, the knee's not what it once was, but at least I'm not waking up with a raging hangover 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh, look, you know what? I totally agree. I absolutely agree. And I admire anyone that can make that decision. And the thing that comes with getting sober is over the years, slight things do change. The people that you hang out with, the places you go, the way that you think, and you learn to deal with things instead of going, have a drink, you know, and it's quite amazing to do. And you look so healthy as well. Like, being a vegan must really agree with you. I've done the veganism myself. I ended up putting on weight eating all those plant-based burger patties.
Oh, really? Damn expensive too.
Yeah, they're easy to make.
Absolutely.
And I know that you have a beautiful wife and 2 young girls.
That's
so cool.
So I've been married, jeepers, I better get this right.
Yeah, you better.
I think it's going to be 18 years this year.
No way.
And my girls are, Everly is turning 12 on Saturday.
Aww.
So we're doing sleepover and sushi train. She loves sushi.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And Scarlett is going to be 15 this year, and that's a mind trip. So they're really changing in front of my eyes these last few years, gone from little girls to now growing into teenagers, and it's been really interesting watching it change.
Are they vegans?
No, they're both vegetarian, and they made that decision themselves. Look,
they were actually
driving with Jeannie, and there was a sheep truck in front when they were younger, and they started asking, you know, what's... So Jeannie told them what was where the sheep truck was going, and they were horrified, and that kind of made them decide they didn't want to eat meat anymore.
Yeah, I was brought up vegetarian with my mother.
Yep.
We did eat meat like very early on in my life, but then vegetarian, and then like sort of reintroducing myself to meat in my 20s was interesting.
I bet.
Not that interesting, but it was like, so I love that kind of lifestyle. I absolutely do. And also myself going through a whole fitness thing at the moment.
Yeah,
like,
that's awesome to see. Keep
like,
it up.
God, like, I've lost 18 kilos,
wow.
But now I'm building these muscles. I've gone
into... some guns. I should say there's a really cool cafe here called Family.
Yes!
I went there this morning. Woo! I was so excited.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, the things that excite me now is a 53-year-old is going to a really nice vegan-y cafe.
They're amazing.
So I popped in there this morning. I was like, wow, great that Masterton's got that.
Yeah, had Victoria, one of the owners. She's come on, and I'm getting her on again. That is an amazing store, actually.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. And that's the thing about Masterton, eh? So what do you think of the changes with the skate park and the pools?
It's great, and that's what you need for kids. Otherwise, you know, you need to give these kids something to focus their energy on rather than the bad things that we did as teenagers. You know,
yes.
I think of some of the horrific things I did with my mates because we were bored.
Yeah.
And we'd just roam the town and get up to mischief, and I won't say too much. I won't incriminate myself, but seeing that skate park getting so well used,
it's
such a positive way for them, such a positive outlet.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say this town needs more is some live venues.
Oh, yes, we need them.
Like, we've tried to come over here and play, and there was obviously King Street Live, which was fantastic. We played there. But we've played the bar.
Oh, the Jackson Street Bar?
We played there, which is great, but you've got the challenge is you've got to bring a PA in. So for most venues, they have an in-house PA. So that's what really I understand it's a very hard business model for someone, particularly in a place like Masterton, to make that work. But hopefully some more things can pop up, and it helps build a scene. Then you're going to get more young people playing in bands,
and the thing is that there are so many really cool bands in just Masterton at the moment, and they're doing some really, really good gigs. But the thing they keep telling me when they come on the show is there's not a good venue, and they need King Street again, which Toby was behind that, who did lot of the stuff we're sitting within right now. And the thing is, there's heaps of empty buildings in Masterton too.
There are. The problem these days is noise.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot in Wellington. It's really, Wellington's struggling at the moment too, because all of these apartment buildings are popping up and the people living there, and then they complain about the noise, which is ridiculous. So a lot of the venues and bars are struggling, and, you know, struggling after COVID anyway, and now they've got that on top of it. Whereas you go somewhere like Melbourne, it's the opposite. They actually have bylaws in Melbourne, whereas if you build in a city living, you can't complain about the noise.
So they
really support their scene, and they understand how important to the city that is.
Yeah.
Whereas in Wellington, Wellington's struggling a little at the moment. Yeah. I believe that the fun police have kind of brought it all down a little bit, and, you know, it's not quite as vibrant as it possibly could be, and let's hope it bounces back.
Yeah, I think they're trying to sort out a problem the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Sevens. I mean, that's a classic example. That was the amazing. Hottest ticket in town 15 years ago. Yep. Like, it would sell out in like one day.
Yeah.
And then the corporates got involved, and the council got involved, and the fun police get involved, and it died within it was just gone instantly.
Yeah, I think I went to the last one and I was on acid and it was amazing. The street party afterwards.
Yeah.
So that would have been like 15 years ago. So don't go calculating stuff, people. That was. And they stopped things like that. Yeah, Wellington. Sitting here in Marston and reading stuff about Wellington at the moment, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It used to be really cool. But things change.
It still is.
It'll go back. It always will be.
It can rebuild. It's a wonderful place. I love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Hey, so we've covered a lot of stuff. Now, what I really want to know, and I say this on my show to everybody, I don't really encourage future jumping because I like to live in the present, in the moment. But your future, which I think is pretty bloody bright, is what are your goals? What's something you aspire to or something you're looked into doing?
The thing that I have worked out after 53 years on Earth is the most important thing to me is my health.
Mm.
So I want to be 75. I want to be 80. I want to still be playing in my band.
Yeah.
I want to still be active. I want to still be able to go out for a run.
Yeah.
I want to be living comfortably somewhere with my wife and probably my grandkids by then.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to continue to play music and listen to music. Things like, flash stuff or owning flash cars. That's not really my thing. I would rather focus all of my energy now on being healthy, because I see a lot of people my age who are really struggling.
Yeah.
Like bodies breaking down, or, you know, we touched on drinking and partying and all that stuff, which is great when you're 20 and you're bulletproof. But if you keep doing it through your 30s and 40s, it's going to hit you. And I believe that more men in particular need to start investing in their future health.
Yes.
Because I've got friends who've already died, and I've got, I'm sure by the time I hit 60, I'm probably going to lose some more because they just continue.
It's happening a lot, eh?
Yeah. It's sad when you get to our age, you start losing friends. But, so for me, it may sound very simple, but I just want to be super healthy, and I want to be able to go out for an hour and a half run every day whenever I feel like it.
That'd be amazing, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the most fantastic goals. Move it or you lose it.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually did see a reel the other day of a comparison of an old person who didn't exercise compared to an old person that did exercise, and it's like, I'm staying in the gym, man.
It's the only way to go.
Absolutely. If people didn't realise by now, Steve is our favourite old mayor's son. The eye rolls. He's eye rolling, everybody. So you're Bob's son as well. And I did want to mention that because he is everyone's favourite uncle in Masterton.
Oh, good to hear. He's a good old boy, and he's still getting on and doing well and still involved on committees and all that kind of stuff. He'll never stop.
Nah, we'll see. You move it or you lose it.
Exactly.
Steve Francis, this has been awesome. And what a great way to catch up.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We will keep in touch because I really want to know everything that the band is doing and things that happen with your swim team so I can talk about it on the show. So please do that. And thank you for just being such a great person and such a great influence on people as well.
Thank you.
Whether you know it or not.
I appreciate that a lot. Thank you. And well done to you. You're looking so great.
Oh, feeling great too. Hey, guys, you have been listening to episode one of season two, Everyday People with Camille. We've been talking with Steve Francis. It is 9:40 on a Wednesday morning, the 8th of January. The rain is coming in about 1.5 hours. Computer says rain. I'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.